Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. So nice to have you with us on this Tuesday evening, or for some now it's Wednesday morning, November the 25th on the West Coast, or the 26th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. In about 24 hours, I will be celebrating my first year anniversary with BBS Radio. And so this is a momentous occasion for me tonight as well as tomorrow. And I just want to share that with the listening audience, those that haven't been on board quite as long as I have been here with BBS Radio or on the old network. And I won't even mention their name. It's been an interesting experience for me. I've learned a lot from the listening audience. I've learned a lot in doing the research that I've done to bring the truth to people, and it's going to keep going on. So we've reached a milestone here. We're on the cusp of that momentous event for me and hopefully for my listening audience, and I just wanted to bring some attention to that. Before we bring on tonight's guest, I'd like to acknowledge an email that I received from one of the listeners, John in Massachusetts. Now, normally, I don't read folks' emails. This is kind of interesting what he had to say, and it sort of encapsulates last night's show. Those of you who tuned in last night know that I had selected a reading from an old edition of the Phoenix Journal. In fact, it was number 2 from 1989. And these were the words of Christ and also the transcriptions of Christ's teaching from Judas Iscariot. And this was the message I got from one of the listeners. In fact, I was hoping that I would get at least one, and I got a doozy, and I felt it was worth sharing. So this is from John in Massachusetts. The subject line, wow. Don, you did it again. I never call or write to program hosts, but you will be receiving a lot of emails if you keep having programs like tonight. All I can say is amen. Regardless of the author of the document you read, through discernment, you can come to an understanding of the truth within. I love these people that have to have credentials in order to believe anything they say. The credentials are within. They're built into all of us by God. You just got to ask. The part that you read in the first part of your program is everything that I've believed in my spirit for some time. Did I find it in the Bible? Did I find it in meditation? Or did I find it from simple observation? It is probably discernment of all of these, but mostly talking to God and asking that the truth be revealed. God doesn't always talk to you with words, but he will always give you an answer. Many times he will present a situation or person in your path that will give you the information that you need. When my daughter was a child, she would come up with profound answers to many problems in my life. She didn't have any other credentials other than a pure heart. I agree with everything you say about the Bible, but we mustn't throw it out. I believe that one will never understand the Bible unless they have had a supernatural experience. Joe Church would say that you have to read the volume of the Bible 7 times to understand the deeper meaning. The Bible is written on at least 3 levels. There are many ways to know God, and I do believe the Bible is one of them. Flying saucers, beings from other planets, other life forms, the inner earth, and the corrupt church is all in the Bible. One will never find it if all they understand about the Bible is Eve ate an apple. The problem with church is that it was created by Constantine for the continuation of the Roman Empire when it was falling apart. I'm not a scholar. This is just my belief. It was conceived for the purpose of control. The concept of, if you can't fight them, join them. But for the discerning, those attempts didn't work. Most, if not all, wars were fought in the name of God, not to mention the Inquisition or the current Pope, who had the title of the Chief Inquisitor before he became Pope. Ezekiel talked about flying saucers. Jacob and John astral projected and were taken to other dimensions. It talks about fallen angels having sex with the women of earth. I didn't hear anything in the document that is not in the Bible. The problem is with intent of the people who assembled the Bible, not with the Word of God. If you seek it, you will find it. The Book of Enoch was once part of the Bible, but was removed at the Council of Trent. The archangels are named in Enoch along with Satan's angels. The first paragraph of Enoch dispels the flyaway rapture theory that's being taught in the church today. Once again, I'm just a person that experiences God's miracles on a daily basis. Jesus said, you are either for me or against me, not Georgie. Just tonight, I asked Joe Church, if the Bible was never written, would you know God? And he said, yes. Joe's the guy to ask about all this stuff. He can quote chapter and verse, and all I know is what I believe. Enough of my ranting. I just want to thank you again. You are unbelievable, Don. Tonight's program was probably the most important information I have ever heard on the radio. There are three people I listen to for the truth. You, Rick Adams, and Joe Church, and maybe Miles. Jehovah bless you, Don. You are a pure spirit of God. Thank you for the instructions you gave your listeners at the end of the program. That statement was of pure love. P.S. Your listeners asked what they can do. The answer is very simple if done with a pure intent and conviction. Tell them when they pray or meditate to simply ask God to lead them and show them what he wants them to do. That's it. The thing I found was he will have you do the thing that you most want to do anyway, but with a different intent and understanding. Here I am, an old dude who hasn't played music with a band for about 7 years, and he got me a gig with three different bands. How cool is that? This time around, I have to get my ego out of the mix and let God lead the band through me. Sincerely, John in Massachusetts. What a wonderful email, and I want to thank John for sending that. And, of course, I encourage anyone that gets anything out of the show to write. I'm probably going to start posting some of these emails on my website, directlightproductions.com, and honor your perceptions and your insights. And I have to agree with what John said here. We are totally in agreement. With that, I welcome again to the show for the umpteenth time, maybe the 17th time he's been counting. He has his own website, educate-yourself.org. He is a metaphysical scientist and researcher, a journalist, and an investigative journalist as well. He is a light bearer and a truth seeker, and I would say he's become quite a good friend, one of my best friends on the whole planet. And I've had the great fortune of knowing him since around last April or so, and I invited him back to the show on this special night for me, just to have his vibes around my celebration of my first year with BBS. Welcome to the show, Mr. Ken Adachi. Ken, how are you?
Good. Thank you, Don, and great to be on with you, especially tonight. I wasn't aware it was your anniversary, but I'm honored that you booked me for tonight, so it's a pleasure. A year went by much faster than I had thought. It's amazing.
Yeah, well, the time we must be having fun, isn't that the saying? Time
well,
flies.
Yeah, that's true. But it seems the seems that you, I have the feeling almost like you just had begun this a few months ago, and now it's already up to a year. I mean, it's just amazing. So, yeah, like I say, time goes by fast. You know, you're really into the moment. You know, you're not watching the clock.
Yeah, well, I want to take a moment and thank Dr. Len Horowitz for asking folks to stay on and listen to the show. He was talking about the sacred tones, or the sacred frequencies, we could say, and the application in healing, you know, particularly 528 and 417. And he had received a call from a gentleman. I think he was from Canada, if I heard correctly. I was just getting my equipment lined up in that for my broadcast. So I had like one ear on the show and the other ear on all of my electronics. And there was a question asked about 528. And I've been doing some production work in that area, so I've really been in tune. And what I've noticed, amongst the other things that I have trouble vibrating with, like the news and politics, I noticed that now that when I'm listening to regular music, and I say regular music, music tuned to A440, I have a bit of a problem. It's almost like somebody scratching their fingers on the chalkboard at school, if you know that feeling.
Yeah.
And it's not to demean the music, it's that frequency really starts to resonate, and then you notice when you've been listening to a lot of it that something sounds flat, or something just doesn't vibrate right. And it's sort of like drinking a cup of coffee that's a little bit too weak or too cold, and it just doesn't satisfy you. But I'm noticing that more people are waking up to this possibility of us reaching the sacred realms of where music really performs miracles. And many are not just musicians, but listeners themselves. And I know you're somewhat familiar with it, and you have a background in music. And for the sake of somebody that might be tuning in that was listening to Dr. Len's show, what are your thoughts about that, Ken? You've got a great background in music yourself.
Well, I continue to have a strong appreciation of music, but I was a performer for many years. I was a player, and anyone who strives to be a serious musician has spent tens of thousands of hours over many years practicing alone, and in those moments of solitude, when you're at a certain level of technical competence, particularly when you're alone, you can get into a inner world in playing a piece of music, and you step into a different type of consciousness, and presuming you're at a sufficient level of playing proficiency so that the technical part of it doesn't hang you up, you can experience a special type of let's call it, I don't know, inner reverie or inner grooving. I mean, it's a very satisfying feeling, and it's a joyous feeling, and you I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. Even when you're finished playing, even though you might have performed a lengthy piece, you're not really tired because you're so you have an inner exuberance and joy of what you're doing. So that I've always enjoyed. I've always had that.
Yeah, I understand what you're describing. I go through that when I'm creating a piece of music, and I go through that when I'm recording in the studio, and it's pretty infectious when you have that exuberance about the work. It's really not work at all. It's the joy of being in the creative process.
Right, right.
And I know that even the people who come to the studio to watch and to listen to what's going on during a recording session are very difficult to usher out when it's time to close. Everybody wants to listen to the music one more time. They want to soak up that vibration as much as they can.
Right.
That's the joy of creativity. Mm-hmm. Pure and simple. That's all it is. And it's really who we are. It's our nature to be that way. And you find that in the studio more often than... I'm not saying you don't see it in a concert or in a live performance someplace, but there's a particular level of working in the studio where people are memorializing their work. They know that it's possibly going to be a once in a lifetime experience,
right.
And at that moment their intent is to produce something that will stand the test of time. And so they put their all into it, and they really tap into their higher power, you know, their the highest aspect of their creativity. And that just rubs off on everybody. So, you know, I'm quite familiar with that. And I get that sometimes going back, listening to what we call the classics, and I don't necessarily mean classical music as a style, but the songs that withstand the test of time, well-crafted songs, and songs that just have the most beautiful arrangements and all the feeling you can imagine, and soul, you know, spirit. When you feel that, it doesn't matter if there are imperfections in the music, there's something that touches a person, and it withstands the test of time. So that is one aspect of that. Now, what I was referring to more specifically is the actual frequencies and how they shift your whole consciousness to another level. It's as though there's something metaphysical going on where one's DNA is being repaired reassembled.
Right. Yes. So to get more into the science aspect of sound, I had read some years ago when we came to California here. I wasn't aware of an outfit called Borderlands Research, but because I got to meet the Bob Beck group, and from talking to those fellows, they got me interested in going down to the meeting of the local dowsers, because Beck used to be one of the speakers at the dowsers. And so I began to find out about Borderlands Research, because Bob Beck, among others, people who I had met, used to write for the Borderlands Research Journal. It's kind of a Southern California phenomena, because the people who originally founded it in the mid-40s, Mead Lane, was located in San Diego. So the Borderlands operation was always, located in some part of Southern California. So anyway, I find out about this research. They sell books, mainly videos, that type of thing, but they're dealing with, let's call it, alternative science. So that's how I first really found out about the wonders of Reich and Tesla, etc. It was all through Borderlands. Now, one of the guys that really got my attention, and there was a book written by a man named Dale Pond, it was a guy named John W. Keeley, who was a an unusually gifted fellow at the end of the 19th century. And he discovered that sound, if you knew, he discovered the secrets of sound. He was able to do all kinds of magical things with the correct combination of frequencies, including he achieved anti-gravity, free energy. The man was phenomenal, and he, and all of his work is based on sound. So when for instance, I think it was the book that he did with Joey, I forget the man's name, Dr. Joey somebody, called Healing Codes. That book came out around 2000, something like that. Healing Codes, maybe Healing Codes of the Apocalypse. I can't remember the exact title, but Len goes into the story about how he met this Dr. Joey. And this man really tripped onto some fabulous info. Now, if anyone is a student of Royal Rife, you would know that he was able to accomplish all kinds of healings using specific frequencies. It had a device that would put out a plasma beam, sort of an electromagnetic field, that a cancer patient, for instance, would sit within this field for just a few minutes, just for a matter of 3 minutes or so. And because of Rife's knowledge and skill, he applied certain frequencies that had the effect of disabling a special type of what's known as pleomorphic bacteria and virus that accompany all cases of cancer. He called it BX, Bacillic X, and I think BY, or I think that was his nomenclature. Well, he tuned his equipment to certain frequencies and just had the patient sit within the field for 3 minutes, and he was able to cure 16 of the most. This is he did a test. They did a test, a sponsored test by the Scripps Institute in La Jolla, California, in the mid-30s. I think it was 1935, 36, in which they scoured the country for the most advanced terminal cases of cancer, in which the doctors in each case said, "There's no way this person can survive. You know, this is a terminal case." Many of them just had weeks to live. Rife, using his equipment and these specific frequencies, cured all 16 cases. Everyone lived to a ripe old age following the treatment. So there's a great deal of magic, as it were, and force, particularly creative force, involved with sound. The Tibetans knew this for centuries. I don't know if we ever discussed it privately, but in one of the Borderlands journals, it might have been in reference to Keeley or Schauberger, I can't remember. There was a man, a United States, he was a college professor, and he had a student who originally came from Tibet. He had him for a student in America, maybe UCLA, I think. And after this man graduated, went back to Tibet, he invited his professor to come visit Tibet. He wanted to show him. This was, you know, in the 30s. This was before, you know, the Chinese had retaken and captured Tibet. And during that trip, the man bought a film crew with him, and they filmed a group of Tibetan monks were they were musicians. They had various musical instruments, mostly horns. but they formed into what looked like a pie-shaped wedge, as it were. There was a number of musicians, I forget the number, perhaps 28 or 30. It was a fairly large number. And at the apex of this pie-shaped wedge, some distance ahead of them, was an area that had a sort of slightly a bowl-shaped surface. It was probably a rock surface. And what the Tibetans workers were doing is they rolled a very large boulder, very large, I mean tons, into the place where this surface was. And then on a signal, the Tibetan musicians began to play certain sounds. And in about 2 minutes after starting this concert, let's say, the boulder that was placed on it began to rock and vibrate and begin to elevate slightly, and then suddenly it shot straight up into the air, perhaps 150, 200 feet or so, and arced over onto a ledge above them. They were trying to get these boulders to a ledge along the side of the mountain where they were building a cave-like structure for meditation and that sort of thing. And the way they, instead of trying to roll these boulders up there, they literally shot them up using this secret of sound that could cancel gravity. Now, this man filmed this entire event. And Gary Wade, who's a physicist and an expert on Royal Rife, I have some articles by him on my website, told me in a phone conversation we had about 7 years ago or so, it might have been 8 years ago, we were talking, and this subject came up, and he says, you know, I actually, as a kid, I saw that film. He says, I remember it very well. He says, it was on one of these, during the 50s, they had television shows that was sort of science-related for kids, and one of them was called Mr. Wizard. And Mr. Wizard would come out and show kids how to do various little scientific things and experiments and that type of thing. It was some sort of show along that line. He couldn't remember exactly, but he remembered he saw it in the 1950s, and he was amazed. He witnessed the very film that I was, you know, I only read about in a book and it was describing to him. So there is enormous power in sound. And I think as the decades roll along, we're going to come into a much greater realization of that we can affect probably complete the healing of the body just using what they refer to as vibrational energy rather than physical therapies like drugs and so forth. So,
mm-hmm. On a prior show with Jim Murray, scientist, yeah. Jim Murray, an inventor, we had talked about Keeley's work. I became interested in it a number of years ago, probably about 30 years ago. And at the same time, I was also very interested in the work of Edwin Babbitt. Now, you don't hear his name mentioned very often, but he was doing
famous color.
Yeah, he was doing a lot of color research with living objects of all types, especially with plants.
Right.
And I got into that research as a result of a vision I had of a device that would heal, basically by changing sound into light.
Wow.
And so I got into Keeley's work, and you could consider him a predecessor to Tesla, mm-hmm. and in a sense Edison, although the work he was doing was far, far beyond what he was ever credited. with. You know, when they accuse him of being an occultist or practicing sorcery, it's a bit of a stretch, but that's generally the approach that mainstream science takes when someone defies their textbook logic, their theorems and their calculations.
But
I found that, and from what I knew about metaphysics, that everything Keeley was saying was actually true. In fact, I accidentally discovered certain vortex phenomena that also go along with his work, and so this is really important information that you're bringing out, because there have been a few people that have taken that. I forget the gentleman's name, but there's a man in Florida that built a castle by himself, moving these huge stones that weighed tons. Do you recall his name by any chance?
Yeah, it'll come to me. It's Linkerstrom. It'll come to me. Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about, and yes, he used I don't know whether it was based on sound or, but he definitely had the secret of canceling gravity, because these coral blocks were simply tons, and he moved them by himself to as we talk, his name might pop into my mind. I'm remembering just fragments of his name.
Well, if it comes to you, just blurt it out. But we got to remember this is radio. So.
Yeah. But anyway, yes, I absolutely know what you're talking about, and I have. I remember. Must have been in the '90s, the late '90s. Art Bell had a couple shows talking about that fellow in the Coral Castle down there, and it's an amazing story. It's an amazing story.
That's always been my contention, that they built the pyramids with sound and light the same way that this gentleman built that castle, and of course they have to give us a primitive caveman type of story,
right,
to tell us that all these people were moving these stones by rolling them on logs.
Yeah.
I mean, stop and think.
It's impossible.
Did they pick them up? Did they stick the logs underneath them?
Right. No. It's any serious researcher into a building of particularly the Great Pyramid at Cheops, which first was built much longer than officialdom claims it is, it was certainly it suffered. What's his name? Robert Bouval, I think it was, and Anthony West did a book somewhere in the late '90s that concentrated on the Great Pyramid and the Sphinx, and they pointed out that, and in fact, Edgar Cayce's book is a good source of information about the true builders of the Great Pyramid. It was built with alien technology for sure, and they had anti-gravity ability, because the Cecil B. DeMille version of it just can't work. You know, it's just these blocks are, what people don't know, at least those who buy into that story, is first the size and the weight of the blocks is unbelievable. You just have some of these blocks that are 50, 70 tons. But what they don't know, in many cases, is the precision of seam that exists between the blocks. They did not have in primitive times, they certainly wouldn't have the technology to cut two matching blocks that each weigh many tons and have the surface match so that you couldn't even place a sheet of paper between them.
I think the distance is something like a 1/1000th of a centimeter or millimeter. It's like incredibly small.
Right. So anyone, that's what I'm saying. If you're a serious researcher and you actually look at the data, it's obvious that it was done with advanced technology. And because of the flooding, there's undeniable evidence of erosion from flooding that the construction has gone back certainly before the great flood, which probably occurred about 11,500 years or so ago.
Mm-hmm.
So the Great Pyramid, has been there for a long time. Most people who talk about it, write about it, seem to agree that the growth of the Egyptian civilization and obviously the building of the Great Pyramid followed in the wake of the flooding of Atlantis, and that the people who built that civilization who were involved in that civilization had prepared to carry on their line, let's say, by moving to other parts of the world, so Egypt being one of them. And it's amazing to hear the curator of the Egyptian monuments there, Zawi Hawass, continued to cling to publicly, let's say, he clings to the traditional statement that it was built during the time of Cheops, etc. And of course, anyone who studied it knows that it is not a tomb at all. It never was intended to be a tomb. It served an entirely different purpose, it was more or less a command center, as it were, for both the generating special energies, as well as in time of war, it was used as a kind of a battle and command center.
Mm-hmm.
But since we briefly touched on the subject of ancient Atlanteans, I was thinking maybe tonight I would spend a little bit of time talking about aliens, because the time is ripening for a public, the government's is going to admit or announce to the world fairly soon. I can't say with certainty how soon, but they're seeding so many stories now into the media and into the internet about increased sightings, etc. This is part of the preparation of announcing to the world, that aliens are here. And fortunately, I just recently was contacted by a German fellow who's living in Central America who wrote a very interesting and valuable essay about alien influence in the life of human beings, and it's quite an eye opener. I might have mentioned that on our last talk, but since then, however, I was sent an email by somebody who wanted to draw my attention to a very recent 5-part essay by Montauk. Now you probably know who that is. He spells his name Montalk, and his real name is Tom somebody. I forgot his last name, but when I first came across him, it was in the 90s, when I was first running my website, and I was fascinated and greatly impressed by what this fellow had to say. And at the time, he was going to school, college, so he's a younger fellow. He's probably in his probably late 20s by now. I think at the time when I first ran across him, he was in his early 20s, perhaps 20 or 21. Very sharp guy, though, very insightful. And this essay that he did is entitled Alien Disinformation, and just excellent info, and it cooperates and complements so well what the German fellow had to say in his essay about alien influence. So I'm going to be reposting that at my website and write a little bit of an introduction to it, but I'm just hugely impressed by what he had to say. His discernment seems to be right on the money. And so I think at the same time, within a couple of weeks of reading that, I was also contacted by another man by email, who's a very nice guy. He originally contacted me a few years ago, and he's written a couple books already. And in his books, he's quoted me a great deal in his books and credited me with a lot of research. And I'm very pleased and flattered that he thinks so highly of me and what I've done on my website. However, he's of the opinion that I'm missing the boat when it comes to the information provided by Zeta Talk. Now, Zeta Talk is the name of a website that first appeared on the internet in October of 1995. Now, I remember that date because I stumbled upon that website in November of 1995. It was just up for a month when I came upon it. And I was greatly fascinated, to say the least, by the information posted there.
Mm-hmm.
Because the lady who was putting up the info, a lady named Nancy Leader, said that the information she was relaying was not from her, but rather from Zeta Reticulans, the group of aliens we call Greys, and that I started to read these files and these articles, and I was just amazed. So I'm hugely fascinated, and I discovered there was thousands of articles there, even though it had only been up on the internet for a month. So she had collected or had put to paper a lot of data, and when she finally started the website and got it up there, she already had thousands of pages available for to download and read. So what I did at the time is that I read the information very carefully. I usually printed it out. I find it easier to read from a printed page rather than the screen. And I was filling up three-ring bookbinders with these pages, and I must have had 7 or 10 three-inch binders. There were so many files to read, and I had printed all this stuff out. So it took me many months to read all that stuff. There was a lot of material there, and even, you know, devoting 3 or 4 or 5 hours a day to just reading, it still took a long time to plow through it.
Now, was she channeling this information? You know, I'm asking this rhetorically for the listening audience.
She didn't put it as a channeling. This is the way she explains it. How she said that she was an abductee of the Greys as a child, and that they had it implanted in her brain, some sort of material that would allow them to communicate with her mind instantaneously, almost as if she had a a telephone hookup to these guys. So if she wanted to communicate with them, she would just pose a question in her mind, and she would hear the answer in her mind. And when she was putting up her files, she would always make the point that, well, okay, the Zetas are talking from this point forward, so that you could distinguish her words from the Zeta words. So she was always very careful to distinguish when the Zetas were talking, it was their words entirely, and when she was talking, she made it obvious in the text that you were reading her words. And so she did not quite call it a channeling, but she said she had this material placed in her brain. She recalls the event when the operation occurred, when she was taken, and recounts the story in one of her many postings about how she came to be in possession of this information. Anyway, I wrote a synopsis about the New World Order initially to my family and friends in the spring of 1996. I sent it to my family and friends because I was concerned that we were approaching a cataclysmic event that was going to kill most of the people on the Earth, because the Zeta Talk site had predicted this would occur in late May, early June of 2003. And I had become so tuned into their info. She would put up new information monthly. It was a great deal of new files, and I would avidly download it, print it, and read it carefully. So I was very much up to speed on Zeta Talk. I was a walk-in encyclopedia of Zeta Talk. And at the same time, there was a newsletter called Contact. This is during the mid to late 90s, in that range, the second half of the 90s, that also came across the Zeta Talk information, and they devoted many issues paraphrasing what the Zetas were saying about many topics. And getting back to my synopsis, I had put it on the internet in 1997, a year later, and it told both an overview of the New World Order, so that at that point I had already read the books of William Cooper and David Icke, John Coleman, and so I wanted to try to relay that information to whoever came upon my website about A, the New World Order, but B, I talked about these what was predicted to be these cataclysmic events that would occur in 2003, and if people did not move to a high ground location, did not prepare for complete, self-sufficient survival, grow your own food, produce your own electricity, because most of the world was going to be wiped out in a sort of biblical type cataclysmic event. They predicted that the poles would flip, the North and South Pole would flip position, that the Earth would tilt over within a matter of an hour, would tilt 90 degrees because of reacting to the magnetic influence of this huge planet, which Sitchin calls the 12th planet, also known as Nibiru. Some texts refer to it as the 10th planet. Nostradamus referred to something called the red something or other. The planet supposedly is red. So anyway, Zeta Talk was absolute. This is the main warning at their website, was that this planet was going to pass within so many million miles of the Earth. It's going to make a swing around our sun, and then head back the other way to on the way out of our solar system. So these tremendous cataclysms were going to occur in the late spring of 2003, and then 11 years later, on its return trip, it would not pass as close, but we were supposed to be rocked with, you know, tremendous upheavals once again. That's what Zeta Talk was saying. And I was so convinced by what appeared to be honest, truthful information about such a wide variety of subjects, I thought the event was going to happen. And I was getting rather concerned as the year 2003 approached. So I asked other people who I thought had more insight into this. And one of the, I met Carol Croft in early 2002, and I specifically asked her about Zeta Talk and their prediction that this event was going to happen in 2003. And she told me flat out, she said, it's not going to happen. She said, it's a CIA, NSA disinformation operation, and the woman is under mind control.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't completely believe it, but at the same time, it did give me a sense of relief because I didn't think I'd have a chance. You know, I wasn't going to make it. My friends and family weren't going to make it. I was thinking we're approaching doomsday.
And so, all that work you had done on your website down the drain. So.
Yeah, well, that's fine. But the point is that I was building up anticipation and built up belief in their information for a period of about 8 years. This began in 1995, mm-hmm. and this ran through until June of 2003. So that's 8 years in which, because I had read all their data, I mean, I was, like I said, I was a walking encyclopedia on this website, and there are tens of thousands of files there. So I really knew what their material was because I studied it very carefully. I thought it was on the level. And because it was so, let's say, you know, big, I paid attention to what they were saying. Now, of course, it didn't happen. And by the way, there was a second person who I had met in Canada who has ability to kind of tune into the spirit world. And I asked him to check, and he says, nope, it's not going to happen. And I said, you're sure? He said, no way, it's not going to happen. So that took away easily 80% of my anticipation and anxiety, but it didn't completely erase it until the month of June came and went. I was really somewhat still had this anxiety in the back of my head because I had built up, you know, this anticipation of it happening over so many years. And, okay, what I thought would happen is I thought Zeta Talk would just go off the air. I thought they would just disappear from the internet and, you know, but that didn't happen. Instead, despite the fact that Nancy was saying just a week before the supposed passage of the thing, oh, it's there, we can see it in the sun, et cetera, she didn't go off the air, but rather, I was told, because I stopped reading them from that point forward, because I realized I've been had. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I'm not going to go back to the well twice. Greatly relieved that July and August and so forth of 2003 rolled around. The sun came up and, you know, the birds were singing and so forth. So I've been had big time. And I had this synopsis on my website for a long time, and I thought it was on the level. I sent it around. It was all over the internet. I mean, I had an effect on a lot of people who, because I wrote this summary of this event, that they, like I, thought it was going to happen. So I don't like being used. I don't like being tricked. I don't like mm-hmm. being a sucker.
Well, I'm not going to trick you, but it's time for us to take a break. So if we can pick up on this after a short pause, so we can give our sponsors a little bit of attention. We'll pick this topic up, and I want you to come back to Montauk too, because you were headed.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely. I have a plan here.
Okay, folks, you're listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, and our special guest Ken Adachi, and I will return shortly. Don't go away.
Thank you. superfood for you and your family. Hemp has nutritional values that far exceed any known plant. Hemp, used for food, clothing, and shelter since time began. Hemp, this God-given food source is controlled by your government, making it not legal to grow for American people and farmers, but legal to import. Our founding fathers grew hemp because they knew of the benefits it offered. The protein powder, seeds, and oil are available through hempusa.org. Recommended daily intake of this food source will allow the body to heal itself from many ailments, loaded with potassium, magnesium, essential fatty acids, amino acids, and it's not available. Another hemp can store with a long shelf life as a life-sustaining food source for you and your family. Will this be the government's best secret? Call today at 908-691-2608 and see what the powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Learn. Help. Shop at hempusa.org. We do not charge for shipping. That's 908-691-2608. Or go to hempusa.org today.
The Idaho Observer, a monthly 24-page newspaper in its ninth year of addressing issues that affect all freedom-loving Americans, is one of the few newspapers courageous enough to print the truth. Concerned about the national debt, if we stay growing up around you, subscribe today. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues, the Idaho Observer prints what you need to know to be a fully informed American. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307.
Houston, we have a problem.
State your problem.
Picking up transmission from Mars.
Number two of Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and our special guest, Ken Adachi. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff. Nice to have you with us. If you're just joining us, we have been talking about several things, music, light, moving big objects, anti-gravity, and aliens. And we're going to keep that topic going here. And we're not talking about illegal aliens here, unless you want to talk about whether or not they have a right to be on this planet. I tend to think that the government cover-up about this issue has more to do with their fear, not of how we will react, as far as coping with the very prospect of beings from other realms on this planet, but more about their incapacity to deal with it and their own fear. These forces, you know, the reptilians, the draconians, and even the greys are much too much for these pedophiles and drug dealers and money launderers, thieves, if you want to call it that, of organized crime, calling themselves our political leaders. They're really, you know, when you think about all of this, it really boils down to the fact that the very fear that they want us to feel is what they're experiencing themselves. Do you agree with that, or?
Yes, in one area.
By the way, I'm hearing a heck of an echo. Are you hearing it from your end, Don?
I'm not hearing it on my end, but maybe Seth, if you're listening in, you could try to adjust that. Sometimes that's just a volume issue.
Okay.
Am I echoing or are you echoing?
No, it's me. It's what I'm referring to is I hear the echo of myself, so I have to pause longer for my. But it seems to be gone now, so maybe we got it. Okay. All right. I agree with the notion that these alien manipulators, at least the negative ones, that are working in league with our various secret governments, the so-called inner governments around the world. They're not so inner now. They're pretty much one and the same as the outer government. They are concerned about them because obviously technologically and even in numbers, they present quite a threat. But it goes beyond that. I think what becomes clear from the essays, for instance, by Montauk and this German fellow on alien influence, and even in the books of David Icke, he's brought this out, that these negative alien factions have the ability to overlay use the body of what once might have been a human being. In many cases, people who look like human beings outwardly are actually a hybrid of a reptilian individual who can shapeshift into the reptilian form if so desired or under some circumstances, particularly if the person becomes emotionally agitated. We have many instances of YouTube videos in which we see political types like George Bush, like his daughter Jenna Bush, or Fox News reporters going into a morphing that's pretty startling. In some cases, the face will grossly distort into a very hideous-looking appearance. So I believe that in the case of our so-called world leaders, rather than being, let's say, solid humans, I think in a large percentage of the case, they are these hybrid individuals, including the current president, the current president-elect. We've talked about this privately. So I'm not sure we're even talking about humans there. We're talking about reptilian or alien hybrids that are masquerading as humans. In other cases, I agree with you.
I do agree with you on that. And in fact, we have talked about the photos a little bit on some past shows.
Yeah.
I know it's been a while, but certainly we could talk about those if you feel comfortable. I have no problem.
We can. I just want to keep on going along this line, though, because I do want to get to the Montauk information, and that, mm-hmm. the sort of the heart of what I wanted to address tonight is to get back to what I was mentioning before the break, is that this Zeta Talk website had captivated my interest for many years, and after this non-event in 2003, I assumed that this website would go off the air. It did not. Instead, what she did, the lady who's putting up the site, is that she made a statement to the effect that, well, somehow she wanted to deceive the government into sort of a dry run. Somehow, it held no logical sense at all as to, you know, but she was essentially trying to backpedal to come up with a reason why they reneged on what they assured the readers, including myself, for 8 solid years would happen in 2003. This was the main warning of the web, of the purpose. This was the main purpose of the website, to warn of this coming cataclysm. It didn't happen, and she somehow made up some absolutely ridiculous excuse about how it was somehow intended to throw off the government in order to get people to, you know, prepare, because the real deal, it's really going to happen in 2012. Now, I got emails from this man who I mentioned, who wrote a couple books and featured a lot of information from my website in his books. He believed, or is believing, or is assuming that the latest posture taken by Zeta Talk since 2003 is on the level. He's convinced that we're going to have the passage of this Nibiru in 2012, we're going to have the flipping of the polls, you better get ready. In other words, a complete rehash of what they claim was going to happen in 2003, the very things that I wrote about in my synopsis. You got to get the high ground, you got to get prepared for self-survival, blah, blah, blah. She's running the same story. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
They're running the exact same story. They just moved the date up.
Well, you know, you could consider that maybe the planet had to make a pit stop, and so, you know.
Right. So I
just throw that out there, too, you know, just
yeah.
to muddy the
yeah.
waters a little more.
So anyway, I've gotten a few emails from other people who believe this is going to happen, and they don't understand why I'm being critical of Zeta Talk and why I now debunk Zeta Talk, including this man. You know, he's as true a believer as I was, and he's dismayed that I don't see the light and I'm not getting it, and you know, if I don't get prepared, and if I don't warn others, well, we're all going to die. Well, I told him, I says, you just have to, you know, look at the facts that they absolutely promised this was going to happen in 2003, and it didn't happen, and that they're obviously engaged in deception and disinformation, and that while perhaps the majority of, I don't read what Zeta Talk stuff. I have no idea what they're saying. I haven't read it since 2003. I do know that in the years that I did read it, most of the information seemed to be accurate, seemed to be true, and that's what's sucking this man in, and that's what sucks in all people who buy into alien disinformation, is the a large percentage of their data is true. It's accurate. That's how they suck you into buying the whole package.
Well, you know, this story that you're describing recently came out in a Project Camelot video that my friends Bill Ryan and Kerry Cassidy did in Italy with Luca Scantamburlo is his name, and he was talking about let's say, an astronomy buff and journalist, Cristofo Barbato, in Italy, who had supposedly talked to a Jesuit investigator, from the Vatican, and they showed him a film. Now, this was not a red planet in this film, but it's shown from the proximity of like something on Star Trek, like when they're passing a planet, and you see, half the picture is this planet that's off to the left. It really looks staged, and all this terror is supposed to strike the Earth. No one even stops to think that if the Earth, this huge planet, is going to be affected so negatively, how can this thing be up there in space, this probe taking these pictures in such close proximity to the planet? It's absurd.
Right, right.
Absolutely absurd. And,
yes,
and
yes.
When I saw that film, I wrote to Bill and Carrie right away, and I said, you know, this is somebody's dirty laundry they're putting out here again. This is not something credible at all. It makes absolutely no sense, scientifically or otherwise. Metaphysically, it's the same thing.
Right.
There's this rogue planet that's got this consciousness, or somebody steering it. You know, it's ridiculous. And they haven't seen it. And they're making predictions that it's going to be seen from the southern hemisphere. You know,
yeah,
it's ridiculous. If you're going to see it from there, you're going to see it everywhere.
Yes. They're probably talking about the 12th planet and Nibiru. It certainly sounds that way, because when the Zeta Talk predictions also indicated that the approach would be from the southern.
They give it the name Planet X, which...
Oh, that's it. Then. Planet X, Nibiru, the 12th planet, are all the same object.
Yeah, and the X stands for Satan, so, you know...
Yeah, there you go. Now, the Nancy Leader of Zeta Talk had reproduced an article that had appeared in a newspaper in 1983, which was from the Jet Propulsion of NASA, some government agency like that. And they were talking about this telescopic satellite. I think it was the IRIS, I-R-A-S, I think it was the acronym. I'm not completely sure, but at the time, I believe this was before Hubble. And they had talked about this 1983 article that talked about spotting this mysterious disturbance way out in space. But they got the idea, based on the perturbations of other planets, that there might be this mystery planet that's a rogue planet that might use our sun as one of its foci in its travels around the universe. And so they named it Planet X in that article, and supposedly, but as you mentioned, as we well know, that X is a letter that is symbolic of satanic influence, and that the reason all of these television shows we see, entertainment, etc., will emphasize the letter X, even on UHF, a Spanish-only UHF station that features boxing, and they feature the letter X in boxeo, and there's a symbol of the German eagle on there. I mean, there's so many Illuminati symbols in your face that people only realize. So all these television shows, just as a short aside here. Extra, you know, they feature the X, and
they have the Xbox for the kids.
Yeah, right. And there was there used to be a commercial. It's no longer there, but for a while they had some sort of internet stock market manipulation, which had the word X in it. I forget the full title of it, and just think how many shows. Normally, these names would pop in my mind. They're not popping in my head, but there's so many of them that will highlight the letter X in it. Well, Fox News, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But it goes on and on. Many entertainment shows and different types of shows will feature the letter X. That is satanic Illuminati control. That's a neon sign.
I just had a revelation here, too. With what's going on in the banking system and the, soon with the stock markets, it's already occurring, but just with the world economy, I can smell another bailout coming when this thing, you know, when they want everybody to believe that this planet is getting there. We'll have another bailout, and it'll go away.
that's where we're going in the conversation. The reason I wanted to review the Zeta Talk, my experience with Zeta Talk, and review the fact that I paid close attention to what they had to say. I believed what they had to say. I was convinced what they were going to say, and I was totally snookered because I'm a babe in the woods. In 1995, I'm just finding out all this stuff. In the same year, finding out about the New World Order. I'm just an ordinary person. Don't have any special connections with anybody. No special psychic abilities. Just an average Joe. So that was my introduction to alien disinformation with Zeta.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are other websites or other articles that you find on the internet that purportedly are authored by alien beings, and they're essentially, there's one that I commented on a couple years ago on my website. It's the title of it is, I have to paraphrase the title, I can't remember. It's something like, the title is something like, Should We Show Up? Meaning, our Dear Earthlings type of essay. Are you ready to handle the fact that, you know, your space brothers are here, and do you need, you know, do you want our help? And this marvelous five-part essay by Montauk addresses the issue of alien disinformation in great, great depth. Now, he doesn't name any websites like Zeta Talk. He doesn't identify any particular group, but he just talks about principles of disinformation that the aliens, the negative alien factions that are really the ones who are in cahoots with the government. We have to remember that. The government, our government, all major governments of the world, they're all working in league with these negative alien factions.
Mm-hmm. They've taken them over pretty much.
I was about to say that. It's not like, I'm saying they're working under them, they're working with them, and they're dominated by them, they're controlled by them, and most of the top leadership positions are no longer held by human beings. They're these human alien hybrids, which we're calling reptilians. And this is a large percentage of Congress is of this orientation, including people like Al Gore and Barney Frank, and there's many, Nancy Pelosi, she's a shapeshifter. There's a large percentage of people in the Congress that are these hybrids, including Barack and George Bush and his kids. So, by studying this essay from Montauk, he really is helping you to be forearmed with the necessary wariness and discernment, so you'll be aware of the sort of deception that Zeta Talk lays down, in which the Grays, for example, want their cover story is this: they want to give us the idea that they came from a dying planet. They because of wars they had among themselves, they poisoned their planet so they could no longer live on the surface. They had to, for many, apparently millions of years, live underground, and then they sent out ships. They arrive on Earth, and the cover story is that they lost the capacity to experience emotions, empathy, compassion, and they would like to regain those emotions. They lost the ability to sexually regenerate, so that they have to be cloned, and they, for instance, they don't have, they only have a rudimentary, a leftover from what used to be a active digestive system, and now it's atrophied, and so they just have the remnants, I guess that's the word I wanted, the remnants of the digestive system, and that in order to gain nourishment, they have to get into these vats. Well, what's in the vats are cut up parts of animals and humans, and they're drawing the nutrients from those human and animal body parts to feed their bodies. Now, so anyway, they want to convince human abductees, and there's been, you know, many tens of thousands of them, and there's literally an army of human gray hybrids that have been produced, because typically a woman abductee might produce as many as, you know, 20 or 30 children for them. They're usually incubated for perhaps a period of 6 to 7 weeks in the woman, and then they're removed from the woman, and the growth process is continued in incubators aboard ship. That's the cover story. And that we're supposedly agreed in pre-birth soul agreements to help them regain a footing and to become more human-like, and we're supposed to march into the future together. Humans are alien friends, and these human-alien hybrids. That's the cover story that you'll read. It's Zeta Talk. That's the one that I read. However, Montauk in his essay points out that the reality is that grays, for the most part, are clones, beings largely cloned by the government, by the military, and this corroborates perfectly with James Caswell's statement that he's been in underground facilities in the UK in which grays are grown. They're produced like a crop, and they have they essentially act as little robots. So that matches quite closely with Montauk is saying. The reptilian, the draconians, apparently, along with the so-called tall grays, are, along with other groups, Syrians, I'm told, are kind of at the head of the hierarchy of the negative alien faction that's working in league with the Illuminati here on Earth. And their goal is to take over the planet and to enslave and to get rid of most of humanity. This is undoubtedly why we're being poisoned with chemtrails, why they make bioengineered diseases like AIDS and their latest crop of bugs like the avian bird flu. They're planning on, or their game plan is, I don't know if it will work, but their game plan is to weaken us weaken our immune systems by constantly poisoning us with daily chemtrails spraying. So we're breathing in barium, arsenic, you know, all kinds of fine irritants.
Anthrax, tuberculosis.
Yeah. Yeah, they get deep into, there's a number of pathogens, but the idea is that it greatly cripples our immune system because these fibers, et cetera, embed deep in our lungs. They, you know, anyone who's gets cancer from asbestosis, you know, those fibers are so small and they're sharp and they can't be coughed up out of the lungs, so they continue to irritate and eventually they cause cancer. So I have to believe that the, many of the metal particulates, et cetera, fibers that they're dropping, are for that purpose. And, of course, many people do get, quote, flu-like symptoms when there's heavy chemtrail spraying. We just had it here about a week and a half ago. I got quite sick for 5 or 6 days. Normally I don't succumb to chemtrail stuff, but I did then, and my wife did, and many of her students and people contacted me by email. So
I recommend heartily that everyone that's concerned about that look into Michael Anthony's private stock, which is on my website sponsors page. I'm seeing people get sick around me left and right on a regular basis, and I've not gotten ill, and neither has he. So
I know. I've talked to Michael just recently. In fact, I put together my first order. I just talked to him on the phone about 3 days ago.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, I know. It's taken me a while, Don. I'm slow. But so I have a great deal of faith in your recommendation and in Michael, because Michael certainly seems like an advanced type person. So,
you know, if I can interject something here, you know, as I'm listening to you describe all this, this ties into what we were talking about at the very top of the show when we're talking about vibration. And I've been talking about, you know, for the past few weeks, higher consciousness. Mm-hmm. And all this stuff that they're doing, the chemtrails and the fluorides in the water and these pathogens that are sprayed on the food and the genetic modification and the electromagnetic technology that they're using, like HARP,
yeah.
All of that lowers the vibration or lowers the frequency on this planet, and it pulls us down further and further and further. And all we have to do is recognize that and make a determination, choose that that's not the path that we're going to follow individually, and we can counter it just with our attitude and our awareness that's
exactly.
Going
exactly. Well, I you know, you're doing an excellent job of projecting ahead. That's where I was going in this conversation.
Sorry, I don't mean to take your
time. No, I just that you're so intuitively sharp, Don. That's why it's more of a compliment. That's where I was going with this conversation. I first sort of wanted to encourage people to read this latest essay. It's called Alien Disinformation by Montauk. You can find it at his website. It's montauk.net, M-O-N-T-A-L-K. But I will be reproducing it on my website and link it up with the German fellow's essays on alien influence, and even couple it with the information that was provided by a couple of wonderful brothers from South America whose material has been on my website for about 3 or 4 years now. It's called Alien Insights. And those guys just have fabulous information. They describe the names of the various alien groups, both the negative and the positive ones, because they've been able to, review and be in communication with them. So I plan to collate all these essays together on one index page that perhaps I'll call Alien Influence or Aliens mm-hmm. and Humans or Insights on Aliens, something along that line.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you, Ken, I presume you're somewhat familiar with the writings of Sheldon Neidel.
Oh, definitely, yes.
And you know, he's been, you mentioned the Syrians, of course. Anyone who's a student of ufology and the history of Egypt, they were highly influenced by the Syrians. Most of the technology they had, most of the more advanced science that was available, at least to the emperors, supposedly or allegedly came from the Syrians.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that they come from a structural dimension, the sixth dimension,
mm-hmm.
and so they're not going to be spiritual individuals, yet they're talking about coming here, and I read Sheldon's stuff from time to time. He puts out a weekly report, and it's always referring to, we're getting very close now to the releasing of all these funds that are going to bring abundance and prosperity to the whole earth,
right?
And that the dark cabal is falling. Well, they know exactly what they're doing, and they can put this stuff out easily.
Yes.
And I tell people, discern who this is.
Yes.
Discern who this is. They're talking about the people in, you know, the inner earth people, the Agarthans. I had Billy Woodard on the show several months ago, and Billy had predicted a craft 1,000 miles wide coming over the state of Alabama, and I think he said Georgia as well, and he may have added Mississippi to that. 1,000 miles is going to cover a lot more than those three states.
Yes, right.
And I said, even if the edge of it comes off of the of the Gulf of Mexico, it's still going to have a much wider radius than what you're describing.
Right.
Somebody's
right.
going to have egg on their face. Well, Billy ended up having to cancel the show. And I didn't read anything about it in the National Enquirer, so I presume that it didn't happen. And I let my listening audience discern what's going on here.
Right.
We get these outlandish stories, and I know quite a bit about what's true and what's not true. And the reason I'm bringing this up is we hear these stories over and over again, and we hear something that sounds encouraging. It seems to have a ring of truth to it. And yet, none of the facts, if what metaphysics reveals in terms of where these beings are, a structural dimension is not going to give them any dominion over us. We should really have no interest in moving into the fourth dimension or the sixth dimension or the eighth dimension, because they are solid structures. They are controlled types of dimensions. And the odd dimensions, like the third and the fifth and the seventh and the ninth, are spiritual in nature. And we're gonna get our truth from that, not from the material, not from the physical, not from what is controlling.
Right.
They're putting this message out as if they are the only ones who are out there. They're calling themselves the Galactic Federation, and of course, Sheldon names other races from other planets. But they're places that nobody's ever heard of, and can you really verify the information? You can only go by the Syrian message that's coming through, and it doesn't ring true except to signify a controlled society.
Yes.
So we have to be careful. Is the point that I'm making here?
Yes. And that is the value of reading this splendid. And very, you know, lengthy essays. He's so far he's put up five parts. There is going to be a sixth part in which he'll address the positive factions and the more positive output. But his analysis and cautions and insights are simply off the chart. It's probably the best. And he has a long reputation of doing good work, but it's probably the best I've yet to read of him. Very, very well written, and no wasted words. Very, very cogent, not alarmist at all. Again, he's very diplomatic. He doesn't name any groups, but yet you can clearly see who he's talking, if you study this subject, if you've read these various, alien-type websites. It's very clear who and what he's talking about. Excellent, excellent insights that will help prepare people. So, my friend, the man who was so complimentary to me and his books, etc., who's bought into the Zeta Talk cover story, perfectly sincere guy, and he's in the same place that I was a number of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But
I can tell you this. I've been on phone conversations where I've been interrupted. You know, the conversation has been tapped into and intercepted, if you want to use that term.
Okay.
And not by normal means. And I picked up some very strange sounds, very strange language. And and you can only laugh at it. But I can tell you that those listeners out there that wonder if this is true, these entities that we're talking about are real in the sense, but they don't have the power over us unless we enter a stage of fear. And that's a topic I've been handling for the past 2 weeks, is fear. That's what they feed off of, the fear.
Yes.
Well, everything you're talking about is fear-based as far as what they're doing, so...
Yes,
you know.
And the way, you for the most part, it's going to be the negative factions that are going to be presenting themselves to us as the good guys. Montauk mentions this in the essay that, openly hostile alien factions are not the problem. It's the alien factions that try to pretend they're good guys, but they're really manipulators in sheep's clothing. And this is where you get into the Zeta Talks, the group, for instance, and probably the people that Sheldon Niles is talking about, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea that these alien groups want to try to set it up so that we look to them to save us from disease, from nuclear war, from Armageddon, from cataclysmic events, beam us up, take us off the planet, save us. The whole idea of the rescue thing is part of the deception package, and you gotta recognize that. I hear, for instance, on TV, UHF, Jack Vanapee is one of the, commonly seen TV evangelical types. He does a very passionate show with his wife, and boy, Jack is waiting for the rapture to come. My God, Jack is practically giddy with excitement that the rapture is going to take him and all the other faithful of his group off the planet, and they're going to be spared the pain and suffering, death of Armageddon, and they're going to be delivered into a paradise with Jesus, and it's going to rule from Rome for 1,000 years, etc.
Well, of course, this message can only be reinforced by a new video every couple of weeks, too.
But anyway, the notion of the rapture, if it does take place, it won't be an event that's being directed by God or Jesus. If you're going to be, aliens have the ability to lift you off the planet if you want to go. They have something called a tractor beam, which is normally when they pick up an abductee, they can, float him off his bed, float him through a wall, through a window, and right up into their ship. So they certainly have the ability to do this. If they can do it with one person, they can do it with tens of thousands. So if the day ever comes that, you're presented with the notion of, you want to come with us, we're going to save you, all your friends are on board here, we're going to take you to a safe place. Well, I know Jack and Roxella are going to go. I'm quite sure of that. But they're in for a rude awakening.
And their announcer, Chuck, he's got to go, too.
Yeah. They're not going to survive the trip. A reality of certain alien groups is that they are cannibals. They eat human beings. And those who buy into that crap are going to, get a very rude awakening. So I mentioned that in an email to this guy, that he's got to show more discernment and stop buying, into their cover stories. And Montauk simply does a fantastic job of elucidating the facts. This is the really
important aspect to his to this essay is that
now,
he analyzes it very well.
What is his background that gives?
Well, good question. I don't really know, and I'm not sure he's ever put it out there. He showed up on the internet somewhere in around 96, 97, 98. I was drawn to his website. Probably somebody contacted me, and once I started reading it, I was so impressed. He struck me, and again, I'm just guessing, as probably an advanced person. Maybe he's not originally human, but maybe comes from a more advanced civilization from another planet, perhaps. And I have the feeling, or I get the impression, that he's definitely a teacher. He's way ahead of the average Joe Blow. Maybe he's a type of, because he's rather young. Remember, he's probably in his 26, 27, 28. 28 by now. He's a young person. He might be what they call an indigo child, with more advanced ability. He doesn't claim that. I'm just saying that. But I have the feeling he's probably from another planet, and he's a more advanced person because he's certainly tuned up and tuned in. It doesn't mean he's infallible. In his earlier writings, he was very much impressed in by the information presented by a woman named Laura Jacobs Knight, and she has a website that's channeling a group called the Cassiopeians, which I read some of it. I didn't read all of it. There's a lot of data there. And it seems okay. I have some concerns about the woman herself, and so I'm not completely sure that it's all on the level. But it seems to jive with other sources of info. And so, but so he Montauk, for instance. Gives a lot of credit to the books of Trevor Constable, for instance, and I have a close relationship with Trevor, and I certainly agree that information that he's provided, particularly about Wilhelm Reich, Rudolf Steiner, and Dr. Ruth Drown, are very valuable additions to our overall knowledge base. So. To answer your question, no, I don't really know the details. I don't know if he's ever put it out there, but based on the quality of his writing and the sharpness of his mind and his analytical and his intuitive ability, he seems like an advanced person. He doesn't seem like the average, run-of-the-mill, reincarnated human. He seems to have above-average ability.
Okay, you know me well enough. I'm going to go down the rabbit hole ASAP on anyone like this
that's
bringing out that kind of information. He's registered under the name Thomas Cox in Muscatine,
I never knew his last
Iowa.
Name. I just knew the first name, Tom.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the registry company for his website is Lunar Pages.
Okay.
Find that interesting. That's a new one I hadn't heard of. But
that's the same server that I use.
Is that the same one? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's my server.
See, I never checked yours. So.
Yeah, Lunar Pages.
Okay. So, that's what I know about him. That certainly doesn't make him look bad or anything. I'm just interested to see if he was operating on his own or affiliated with someone else, but it appears to be rather benign.
Yeah, again, I don't know because I haven't done an in-depth analysis or attempted a research, but based on his writings, I read a great deal of his stuff when he first came out of the box somewhere around 96, 97. I put them on my website. If you go to my website, those links at the top of each page, one of them says Montauk.
Mm-hmm.
But then I haven't checked his material, maybe in 5 years. I just, you know, got so busy with my own stuff that I just forgot to go there and even read. But this latest piece, because I had posted the German fellow's information, a considerate reader said, listen, you really should read this latest essay by Montag. He composed it between late October and early November, so it's a very recent essay, and I did read it. I printed it out. Prints out to about 40 pages,
mm-hmm.
and I'm greatly impressed by what I read. I look forward to his sixth part, in which he plans to address the positive aliens, but the discernment seems to be very, very, very well thought out, and his analysis is also very well done, very clean, logical, analytical presentation. If you're a logical, analytical type, as I am, it's very well done. It's very appealing to an intellectual analysis of what's taking place. And he does avoid emotionalism. And as I said, he's very diplomatic. He doesn't name anybody or identify any particular. When he does name somebody, if he uses a name, it's because he has something positive to say about that person's work.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very carefully written essay, and it does get your attention. I'm gonna reproduce it on my site, and I'm gonna showcase it a bit because it's really important. People should read that. In fact, I might even have some of my volunteer translators put it into other languages. It's really mm-hmm. a very important piece. So,
do you think he would like to come on Evident Footprints?
He might. It doesn't hurt to ask. I'm sure he knows who I am because I referred a lot of people to his website. I'm trying to recall. I think we did send a few emails back and forth somewhere around 1999 or 2000.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a person who, you know, craves publicity or becomes overly, you know, excited if you put him on your website or et cetera. So, I don't. Why not? It's worth just sending him an email. You can approach him directly when you go to his website. His email address is there, and you can just tell him who you are and. Just say that you did a show with me, and I mentioned his extraordinary essay on alien disinformation. And would he want to talk about it on the show? There's an even chance he'll be interested in doing that. I know he wants to get the information out. He's trying to help. So yeah. So that was my thought for tonight's. Tonight's get-together was to caution people that the aliens coming out is approaching. Now, Montauk said it's going to happen, you know, within 10 years, and I'm sure that's the case. My own take is we're going to see something probably within the next year or two. Something very dramatic. The government's going to announce blah, blah, and then we might actually start seeing large armadas of alien craft. We might be looking at holograms. They might not be the real thing, but I'm sure these displays of large armadas of ships going over major cities everywhere in the world, Europe, the United States, etc., is part of their game plan. But, of course, it's part of Project Bluebeam. The alien coming out is a long-planned deception scheme. So if you should read Project Bluebeam, which is also posted at my website, so you get an idea of what they're planning. We should not be in fear. There's no reason to be in fear, but we should not be deceived. And that's most people, like God knows how many people in this country have been totally bewildered, hypnotized by Barack Obama's performance. So I expect an equal an equally large percentage of the American public is going to buy the alien deception hook, line, and sinker. So that's going to be unfortunate because if you read Montauk's cautions, you will understand that it is not in our interest. The whole alien brotherhood, you know, they're going to save us, they're going to rescue us, they're going to provide the technology we need to overcome these terrible engineered diseases, they're going to save us from war, blah, blah, blah. That whole salvation scenario is a contrivance. It's a way to get us to knuckle under to their authority. And mm-hmm. once they're in control, complete control, they're going to take over this planet, and you can pretty much say goodbye to the human race in the end. For a time, I think what they'll plan to do is after the bulk of the world's population is exterminated one way or the other, either chemtrails, wars, bioengineered plagues, etc., so that we're down to perhaps 500 million people. I think the game plan is to have an enslaved populace that will serve these aliens. And as they continue their hybridization program, that they will eventually replace humans completely with their hybrids. And the goal is to take over this planet and just to turn it into a prison colony.
Now, that's their intention, but
that's their intention, right? That's the point I'm stressing here. That's their plan. We're not going to allow it to happen, but that's what they plan to do, and that's where we have to be aware of the plan. Do not be so foolish as to believe any of these.
You know, there's one of the choices for Barack Obama's cabinet is Janet Napolitano, the governor of Arizona.
Yes, I know.
Or the Department of Homeland Security.
Yeah.
Now, she has been flip-flopping as to her status or her stance about illegal aliens. And I read something either today or yesterday. You know how the days sort of melt into each other now.
Yep.
Something to the effect that she had been involved in some legislation, or at least in promoting some means of documenting these illegal aliens coming in. I'm speaking about the ones coming over the southern border of the United States. And if they didn't have the proper paperwork, that on the second violation of not documenting the illegal aliens, that the companies should be put out of business. Mm-hmm. Now, I wonder if she would do that in Washington. We could solve this Barack Obama problem in a heartbeat.
Yes.
Just put the government totally out of business because
right.
he's not proven he's an American. That's
right.
For
he's an illegal alien. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And in fact, it goes beyond that, doesn't it?
It goes much beyond that. Yes.
From the photographic evidence that we have been looking at.
Right. It's clear from that photograph of him as a 10-year-old boy, taken in Indonesia, with his stepfather Lolo Satoru and his supposed mother, when we did enlargements and croppings, that guy has alien-looking, human-looking, animal-looking entities all over his body. They're just popping out like... Oh, they're popping
Christmas
out like
balls.
Pimples. They're all over his body. Every exposed part of his body has entities that show up when you magnify and enlarge and crop the images and enhance the contrast. So that's what I put up an essay a couple months ago, I guess it was, I'm not sure, in which I began. I have a lot more I could add to it. I just started it. I could put another 40 or 50 shots up there. But yeah, he's one of these, Barack is one of these hybrids, reptilian human hybrids.
What's really ironic is that he's wearing a medallion, which is symbolic of a gray alien.
Yes, in that photo, as a 10-year-old boy, he has a medallion on his neck, and it certainly looks. I didn't know that it was of a gray alien, but it certainly has a kind of futuristic, spacey appearance to it.
Yeah, it's an abstract.
There you go. Right, abstract.
Everyone who has seen that has agreed that's what it represents.
Wow.
You know, those of us who are discerning. Now,
right.
you also, I know I had sent you the color photograph, that was what really revealed
these
anomalies.
Right.
And that the photograph, which was originally color, had been modified to black and white to hide
these things. Desaturated to black and white, correct. Right. And published on the internet as a black and white, yep.
Yes, and it was even in one of the TV commercials, and what was astounding to me, and it was cropped, you see Stanley Ann and him, and you can't see the baby or Lolo Satoru because they zoomed in on
right.
it. But when I sent that picture to you, if I'm not mistaken, you also got to see what I described seeing on Lolo Satoru's arms.
I was going to, when I did the, continuation of the first posting, I was going to crop, enlarge, and show the images on Lolo's arm, and I think you mentioned Stanley Ann on her knees also has some images. And there's images on the walls. There's a number of entities that can be seen on the wall in the background behind them. There's a very obvious one on the right side of the picture.
Yeah, if that weren't enough, and you brought to my attention three photos that were on the internet of Stanley Ann in the nude, supposedly taken by Frank Marshall Davis. And there were also some photos of her supposedly in July of 1961, when she would have been in her third term, taken on the beach, and she was not pregnant then either. Yeah, that's very interesting. In fact, another story came out that she was at the University of Washington for up to 2 years prior to going to Hawaii, period. So this whole thing can be a total fabrication.
Yes.
Just the whole story, which was an alternative conclusion that I came to in my article. And this is what's coming out now in much of the research, that there is a record of her having been enrolled at the University of Washington.
Right.
And her former classmate, Maxine Box, now has a disconnected phone number. She was approachable by the media for some time, and now that he's been elected, no one can get in touch with her.
Right. For listeners, let me just clarify. We're talking about photos of Stanley Ann, and what you're alluding to is that there's a strong possibility that Stanley Ann Dunham is not the true biological mother of Barack Obama. That's what you're getting at. And what you're saying is that there was a photograph of her on a beach in a bikini when she was supposedly in her third trimester, is that what you're saying?
Yes, it was July of 1961.
Okay, so this is in the last 3 months of her pregnancy, and yet she doesn't look pregnant at that date in that photo. And you're also saying that when you have evidence indicating that she was in the state of Washington in the period in which she claims she was in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. Getting
so,
married.
Yeah, so I just want to make it clear to listeners that what you're alluding to is that there is evidence, which apparently you're the only one so far who's dug this up, that Stanley Ann might not be the biological mother of Barack Obama.
Well, I also am writing a fifth article, which should be in the coming month's Idaho Observer in early December. And in this article, I am going to be posting a first grade picture of Stanley Ann, and I have great reason to trust that the source of this information is being honest when he tells me that he was in love with her.
Yeah.
How many Stanley Anns do you think are roaming the planet on any given day?
Right.
And he went to kindergarten and first grade with her. Now, what's interesting about that phenomenon or that story is the fact that she was 7 years old when she went to kindergarten.
Yes.
She had blonde hair.
Mm-hmm.
Her facial features are somewhat similar, but the prominent features, such as the size of her chin, are very, very different. I saw that in the baby picture that I had posted in the part three of the Three Stooges Go to Washington article, as well as in this photo that I see from first grade. Now, one could say, well, that's not Stanley Ann Dunham. But I also uncovered some information that the CIA had done a DNA test off of wine glasses of Stanley Armour Dunham and Madeline Lee Payne Dunham, his so-called grandparents. There's
absolutely
no DNA match whatsoever.
Wow.
Whatsoever. So there cannot be one with Stanley Ann Dunham either.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely not. And in fact, it's not even certain now that Barack Sr. was in Hawaii in the time period that they claim that this this so-called romance started and the marriage and the impregnation.
Yes.
So,
the claimed father, Barack Obama Sr., bears no physical resemblance to Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
The man is much shorter in stature. The Barack Obama Jr. has a much more elongated face. The jaw structure and the teeth layout are different than Barack Sr., and most important, the tone color of Barack Sr.'s skin and the color of his lips are dark Negro, whereby Barack, as you pointed out, seems to be of a tone color, his lips particularly of Indonesian groups rather than dark black African groups.
Mm-hmm. Now, I would ask you rhetorically, Ken, who do you think would be more behind such a story, the communists or the reptilians?
Well, my thought is to answer it seriously, it's a CIA contrived cover story. It
mm-hmm.
seems very typical of the sort of let's say legacy that they planned on. He was groomed for this job, so they had to take pictures at strategic points in his life to prove that he was with Stanley Ann, for instance, to prove that he was born to Stanley Ann in Hawaii, etc. Barack Obama undoubtedly is just one groomed individual who was finally through a series of, let's say, fortuitous events for him, finally decided upon to be the chosen one. He was probably chosen to become president in the early 80s when he was when he got involved with Zbigniew Brzezinski at Columbia, I'm guessing, but that makes sense to me. And but there, judging from what I've read from insiders, mind control victims, etc., they usually groom a large stable of people in preparation for roles as politicians, governors,
religious leaders,
chiefs, military generals, etc. And they have a large stable, and what they do is they kind of see who works out the best.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy that seems to show the most promise, the greatest control, hasn't otherwise killed himself or killed somebody else because his mind control programming went haywire.
they finally decide on somebody. They pick Jimmy Carter, for instance, a good 2 years, a minimum of 2 years, before he announced, before he gave any indication that he would run. So their planning is usually long range.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't hardly depend on, you know, grooming just one individual. There's a large group of people. Most of them don't get used. They're typically referred to as sleepers. They can be, you know, called into action because they're all under mind. They've all been programmed under mind control. So they can be called into action when the time is right. If they're going to, you know, have the martial law routine here, they'll accompany that with a Mad Max, Rodney King style rioting events. So naturally, they're going to if they go that route, they'll mm-hmm. use a lot of mind controlled people. They'll trigger them to go nuts in the streets, same way they did during the Rodney King thing. That was a government operation. That was a Montauk style. A microwave-controlled triggering of a number of individuals to go nuts and to riot. I mean, we only heard about the riots in L.A., but there was a number of other cities in the United States. This was in the spring of 1992, if you recall. I think around April.
I was there when that happened.
You were there, so you know what I'm referring to. And Al Bielek pointed out in his lectures that was a Montauk style. That was a Montauk operation. From the get-go, they turned on the transmitters. These people went nuts, and then they turned them off, and the whole thing calmed down. If you remember the Rwandan massacre in Rwanda around 97, I think, 96, 97, 98, it was during Clinton's term. Another CIA microwave transmission, mind control, a triggering event. What's his name? The fellow from Australia who died a few years ago. Wrote a very in-depth expose about that whole, what's the heck's his name, Australian guy, used to work for British intelligence. Oh, my.
Hmm. I don't know the name.
You'll know the name once I, okay, well, anyway, he died a few years ago, but he had a very insightful website. It's still up, but he exposed that whole Rwandan microwave transmission deal, got all those natives into that killing rampage through microwave mind control signals. So they can turn a riot on and off at will. And if a large percentage of the population is aware of that, it seems to neutralize the effect. It's only people who aren't aware that they have these electronic mind control capabilities that are most easily affected by it. But merely being aware of it seems to prevent it from working as well as it's supposed to. So that's why I mention these things whenever the topic comes up. The more people know, the less these games can work.
Well, Ken, we're out of time. That's usually the last line of the night when you're on. I want to encourage the listening audience to visit your website at educate-yourself.org. There's a wealth of information. I've been there. I haven't seen these Montauk pieces that you were talking about.
I haven't posted them yet, so you can go directly to his site to see them. It's montauk.net. It's right on his homepage there. It's featured at the top. So I'm just going to repost it at my website in the interest of, you know, disseminating it farther and wider. But you can get it directly from him. And yeah, definitely go there and read it. It's a very well done essay.
Okay, well, I want to thank you for the wealth of information that you brought to the show tonight and your calm and collected delivery.
Thank you.
We get a bit more animated when we talk about some of this stuff off the air,
yes.
Just because we can cover a lot more ground.
Yes.
And sometimes we take up more time than the show itself.
Yes, right.
Which also
it's always fun, though.
But it was nice having you on this landmark day for my show with BBS. And the listening audience sends me a ton of email how much they appreciate you being on. So I know you'll be on hopefully a few more times in December before we close out 2008.
Oh, my pleasure, Don, as always. It's always a thrill to talk with you.
And I want to wish you and yours a very happy Thanksgiving. And
thank you.
And stay well, and keep doing the great work that you're doing.
Yes, and happy birthday to you too.
Oh, thank you. So, well, I still got a couple of days for that yet.
Yes,
I appreciate that.
Acknowledge your birthday.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to the next time, Ken. In the meantime, I'm going to say goodnight to our listening audience. You have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and our special guest, Ken Adachi. Again, visit his website at educate-yourself.org. You can spend a lot of time there and many, many repeat visits, I'm sure. I go there and find something new every time. I don't know how he finds the time to do all the work he's doing and keep up the website, but it's one of the best in the whole world, bar none. Special thanks go out to Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and Seth Hendrick on the sound this evening. And most of all, special thanks to the listening audience for tuning in. If you like the show, tell your friends about us. Even tell your enemies. They may become your friends. In the meantime, all of you out there in the listening audience, have a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.